What's up, everybody? David Pollack here of See Ball, Get Ball podcast. I hope you like it, man. Be sure to follow the show wherever you subscribe, YouTube, or any of your other platforms. All right, welcome back in to another episode of See Ball, Get Ball. Brent, we took the week off. Brent Rollins joins me. I'm David Pollack. We took the week off, 4th of July. By the way, for everybody out there, this is the last week off for a long, long time. Like, I don't even know when the foreseeable future is, but it's going to be a long time because football is ever approaching and there's going to be so much goodness to talk about. But happy 4th of July to everybody. Hope everybody got their time. Where does the Rollins spend the 4th of July?
It was early in the week, it was baseball. And then later in the week, it was just pool, golf course.
What a tragedy.
I played
4th of July. I mean,
it was earlier in the week because it was the whole week off, but okay. Big tournament. We did pretty well, though. But still, yeah, a lot of golf, a couple days of that.
I saw you out of the field yesterday. Yesterday, I got home finally.
We happened to run into each other, yep.
Yeah, from a couple of trips. Went to Destin, drove down, drove back up. Then baby girl had a tournament in North Carolina, drove back, literally a bunch of step back into Georgia, drop them off. Grab the dumbbells, go straight to the track because Brent, I needed to go get it out of the element, out of my work. I like my things the way I like my. This is why I don't like to travel. Like I know some people love to travel, but like I like having my gym and my pantry and just so many things when I get out of whack and I'm gone that I don't enjoy. And probably the most is my diet. Like I had coolers upon coolers. I'm the only one who goes to the beach with four coolers, like down to the beach with four full coolers of my food. And I can't stand being away from all my things, but had to get back on it, man. We did some farmers carries the length of the track with the dumbbells and oof, it was not fun.
Two things. The farmers carries, by the way, to the beach are probably insane. Mm-hmm. Carrying the coolers. Those are probably tough. And let's describe a little bit just for the audience, how psycho you are when it comes to what you did yesterday. I was there sprinting with my son and throwing some baseball around. You did the little different. You just happened to show up and do a little different animal there.
Yeah, we showed up with some dumbbells. Now, my buddy Russ Tanner, he's an offensive lineman who played at Georgia. Russ always wants to move. He likes the idea of moving, but he doesn't really like doing it. So he's one of those guys. There's always different kinds of people that work out, right? There's people that work out that they want to be there. They're excited to be there. They work, which isn't a lot. There's people that biatch and complain, but still do the work. And then there's people that biatch and complain and then don't really do the work. So whichever category you fall into, there's a home for you with your workout people. But I texted Russ. He was like, yeah, I needed to do something. And I know Russ. Russ eats like a pig. Like Russ is a former offensive lineman and he wants to eat. And his idea, he's like, if I'm going to throw a 4th of July party, I'm going to eat. I'm like, why? You just feel like crap. The next day it doesn't feel good. So he's out there and he's complaining a little bit. He's a little bit of whining. But we grabbed the dumbbells. We did a mile of walks with dumbbells around the track, and the track was hot. Like the track in the sun at 4 o'clock was hot. But after every quarter mile, we did 25 push-ups, 25 sit-ups, 25 squats. Then you pick them back up. You go again for another lap, drop down 25, 25, 25, pick them up. And we were sweating. We were sweating gravy for sure by the end of it, and kind of get back in a little bit of a rhythm. And just like this show, man, we got to get back in a rhythm. And it's getting closer and closer. And some injuries while we happen, by the way. You don't usually hear of injuries in the off season, but UTV accident happened at Notre Dame, and they lost. If you would love to pronounce this name, Charles
Chigusa.
Chigusa. What are you going with? Huh?
Chigusa.
Yeah, that's maybe. What I said. Jagusa, yeah. Him too.
Like
Saragusa, Jagusa. starting offensive lineman for Notre Dame, which is one of the strengths. But I'll say this about Notre Dame, also kind of one of the I wouldn't say it's a weakness. It's a strength, but the depth is not a strength, Brent. And this is a guy now that you get hurt, and so that's not a good thing before the season, especially in a UTV accident.
No, and those things are never. I've long stayed away from them for that reason. They're fun. But for that reason, I stay away from them. But super also, BYU, their quarterback.
What did he do, by the way? Because he was
violated the honor code.
Yeah, so he was about to get in trouble with the honor. Now, listen, the honor code is strict. Like, just to be clear, it's not like every other campus in the country, and they take it very serious. Yeah. And violating the honor code usually has something to do with alcohol or women or some form of fashion or both. And Retzlaff, who played really well last year and had one of the fun moments, by the way, I loved last year because he was keeping track of the offseason rankings at quarterback in the conference and in the Big 12 conference. Cause remember they're in the BYU's in the Big 12. And he was, and he just was keeping track of how far down the list he was and they continued to stay undefeated. So I kind of like that swag about him, but now going to the transfer portal and
not officially there yet though. That's the interesting thing. He isn't officially there yet, but likely will be.
Likely goes to the transfer portal and doesn't have to serve a suspension. He can go somewhere else. So if he wants to go play football and not serve a suspension, that's a way to go. Because nowadays, Brent, when you get suspended, because now it's pay for play, nowadays you also get hit in the wallet. So that's an interesting thing to consider now when you're an athlete.
And then there's also a college football news related. If you were some of those people who decided to buy a certain version of the video game, I think today was the day for you. For the general public, it's the 10th. So a little bit later this week that everybody gets to play the video game and hear your commentary.
Yeah. And if you're like my son, you'll go in immediately and change it to a different voice. That's what he does. So he doesn't have to hear my voice continually. Yeah. But the game is always exciting. I already have my buddy texting me about the game and, we would never mention his name on here. James Argo, obviously, but like James just, I was like, how's NC State? He was like, just looked at our roster and we're going to cover this today. So we're going to jump into this right afterwards. He goes,
yes,
just looked at my roster. He was like, bro, it's going to be a tough year. Last year, he was all in, baby. He was all in. And I thought him and I was with him with Grayson McCall. I thought Grayson was going to do great and give them some star power at that spot and some good play that they hadn't had in a long time. But now rebuilding, retooling, just like a lot of the ACC. So let's kick it off, man, and get to the ACC.
So ACC, which I was looking back, I was thinking, should we rename the ACC maybe to like
Clemson and the others?
It wasn't them last year. SMU was the regular season champ. Clemson won the conference championship. But 8 out of the last 10 years, it's been Clemson. So I was thinking you could make it be like always Clemson's conference or annually Clemson's conference or something like
all
that.
All in with Clemson?
Yep. All in Clemson's conference. Florida State in 23, Pitt in 21. That was the other two out of those 10 years. But, yeah, for the most part, it's been Clemson's conference.
I was going to ask you those because I thought those were very interesting. But what's crazier to me, this is what's really nuts about this league when you start to pick. So, obviously, we're going to go ahead and tell you we're picking Clemson. I can guarantee you Brent's going to pick Clemson. I'm going to pick Clemson. If you don't, you're probably crazy. But the bigger question about this league is who the heck do you pick next? Because I think it's a roulette game. And for years on TV with Reese Davis, we always did the Wheel of Destiny in the ACC. So how about this? In 24, Clemson beat SMU. In 22, Clemson beat UNC. FSU won, obviously, the year before that in 23. So I'm just talking the years Clemson won. Hey, in 20, they beat Notre Dame for the COVID year, you know, which was weird. 2019, they beat Virginia. 2018, they beat Pitt. 2017, they beat the U, Miami. 2011, they beat Virginia Tech. Dude, that's crazy. Seven of those 8 wins are against different teams. The only repeat one was UNC. So, I mean, it's just been a lot of others and then a lot of Clemson that's played really, really well. And I guess my question is, man, before we get into all this, is there any of the others that you considered? Did you consider anybody else on that tier one, or did you go Clemson, slide them over, and then, okay, we'll discuss who's going to finish second?
Yeah, I basically did what we did for last year's schedule in a way how it fell with them not playing each other, where you had Clemson, Miami, and SMU that didn't play each other. I started looking, okay, who plays each other? SMU, Miami, Clemson kind of plays a couple of them. But
Louisville
is another. Who doesn't play a bunch of the others? And that's kind of where I went in terms of we'll get to that later. But all right, one other trivia question for you. So the most conference wins in the ACC the last 3 years, Clemson, Louisville, and then who do you think is third? Because that's the amazing one. The known football powerhouse that is.
Okay, so FSU is interesting, but they had 2 wins last year. So
one conference win.
So that's got to knock them out of the mix. Miami's been very inconsistent, very up and down. Louisville has had great. Yep.
So it's those two, Clemson and Louisville.
So they're pretty easy. Wake Forest with Dave Clawson was really good for a while, but they kind of fell off with consistency. Georgia Tech?
No. Think
last couple years?
The opposite of football powerhouse, you think of basketball powerhouse. Duke?
Yeah.
Duke is the team with the, other than Clemson and Louisville, with the most conference wins in the last 3 years. And I think that's probably a good way to transition into this first sort of category is, who do we look at as the leap team that's going to step up from the standings? So I'll list the teams that were less than 500 in conference play a season ago. North Carolina.
We don't have that long of a show, Coach.
NC right, State, Virginia, Cal, Wake Forest, Stanford, and then Florida State, by the way, who was at the bottom of that list with the 1-7 conference record. So who do you think is the leap team? There's one obvious selection there, but who might it be other than the obvious?
Well, so I look at this and I'm like, okay, the top six, you know, five or six in the ACC, I feel very – I looked at it and I was like, I feel very comfortable they're all going to be there again. I mean, I will not be surprised if they all very much stay similar. I think the obvious one is probably Florida State. Like, Florida State's not going to be – they're not going to be 1-7. But by the way, I wanted to put some context – I am a positive guy. Like, I am going to be positive. I'm going to try to stay in the positive lane. I don't say things just to be stupid. There's plenty of people that will do that. If you want to tune into that, it's probably not your show. But Florida State sucked. Like, Florida State was terrible. Like, they went 1-7 in the ACC, and they lost by an average of 20 points. This is not a terrible – this is not a terror's row of a league. This is not a league that's – super deep, that's super talented. 1-7, lost by an average of 20 points, lost to Notre Dame by 49, to SMU by 26, to North Carolina by 24, to Florida at a conference or out of obviously by 20. Like, I just don't know what the heck that is, what that was. Now, listen, Tony White comes in as your DC, Gus Malzahn comes in as your OC. And so I got to think with the talent and Thomas Costanello at quarterback, but I think he's good. I got to think, Brent, that they go from being a bottom team, the last team in the ACC, and I can't see him being lower than like 7.
Yes, middle of the pack.
It's got to be a big turnaround, and it has to be Florida State.
Was there anybody else that you – because to me, I look at this a lot of times with – that's a big leap for them. If they say they get back, you know, 4-4, five, even 5-3 in ACC play, that's a big leap from where they were a season ago. To me, the leap is, hey, can you be someone that leaps up into the conference championship game discussion?
And you got one of those?
And to me, there's one team that could take a couple game leap in, especially within conference play, by the way, especially within conference play. And that is the team that is 75 miles to the west of us.
I would go with Georgia Tech.
Georgia Tech.
Yeah, and I could see that because Haynes King's in year 27, or is it 28? How many years has he been? I mean, it feels like it's been a while, homie. Like, Haynes King, and he's
– year three at Georgia Tech.
Yeah, you know what's interesting about Haynes King? I think if you played, like, pickup and you just said, hey, we're going to go do a pickup game, like, you're not taking him very high. Like, he doesn't throw it elite. He doesn't run it elite. Like, you'd kind of be like, all right, there's a lot of people that I'm going to pick before that dude. And then, you know, he goes out there and he finds a way to break a tackle and get 20 yards. He finds a way to read it correctly and get yardage and to make the pass a play when you need it. Like, it's just, it's interesting. But I do think with, you know, with Hayes, with Rutherford at receiver, like, you've got some weapons. You've got an established culture. You also got a coach that I think everybody believes in, of his identity, of who he is, and then an OC with Faulkner, who everybody believes in and thinks he's great. So I could see that. I could see that with Georgia Tech, but I'm not going to bank on it. But bro, if I'm looking at the bottom, is Stanford the worst team in college football? Like,
After all the departures, they might be this year.
All the guys, like, they got a good DN, bam, he gone. They got a good receiver, bam, he gone. Like, transfer portal. Like, the coach has been there 10 days. You know, they got a new GM in Andrew Luck who's going to learn how to do this stuff on the fly. Like, obviously, it's just tough. I can't imagine that Stanford is going to be very good. So,
I thought about the
same
Pitt.
Characters at the top. And on the bottom, I think it's going to be the same characters, too.
Yeah, Pitt was the other one I thought about because – they started out 7-0 and then lost six straight. It's like, okay, can you still return your QB? You still return your really good running back in Desmond Reed. Like, you've got playmakers. Can you get other things fixed and be a little more consistent and not sort of fall off a cliff and maybe get your two wins better in the league and 5-3 instead of 3-5? But
I think that's easily the best pick when you're looking at all those other teams because mm-hmm. Pat Narduzzi has shown you culture. He's shown you toughness. He's shown you winning with what? With less talent. Like, Pat Narduzzi does it consistently. And their offense is always like, oh, God, please don't screw me up. Don't screw it up this possession. Like, it's always hard to trust their offense. But, I mean, they were a stop away from beating Clemson. You know, yep. I mean, Cade Klubnik scramble in the two-minute drill away from beating Clemson. And they're always competitive. They're always tough. Like, if I'm a Pitt native, man, like, I'm okay with that, man. Like, I'm always in the mix, and I'm well-coached and – you know, don't typically beat myself. So, yeah, Pitt is definitely clearly above all the rest of those other teams. UNC with Bill Belichick, like, what is he going to be? I mean, who's going to be their quarterback? Like, I know they paid a bunch of money to a kid from New Mexico, and, like, that's fine. But Max Johnson, who's coming back off of injury, I'm just telling you right now, is a Belichick – if Belichick sits down with him – and gets to know that personality, and he comes from Brad Johnson, who's an NFL-style quarterback who's got some – he's got some great moxie to him and some toughness to him. Now, that would be interesting to pay all this money to somebody and then not use them, and I don't know if they're going to do that in this day and age, but I have no clue what to expect from Chapel Bill except a hot honey walking the sidelines. That's all I know is going to happen.
Well, I was actually going to bring them up because I don't – there's nothing with the rest of this that I look at them and like say, okay, they're interesting or that's going to be intriguing. It's literally just him in terms of watching and how he handles the college game. Now they did bring some kids from Washington with them, but you think, okay, well, they're going to be better defensively. They're going to, in terms of just overall coaching, he's going to bring quality coaching there, but does it lead to anything greater than 3-5 or 6-7? I don't really know.
Well, I don't know either, but if I'm going to bet on it, then I'd say yes, because here's the thing. Being around Bill a little bit, I've never – for example, I'm going through all the NFL meetings. I'm literally sitting down as a player, and I go in every meeting door or all these different meeting rooms, and you sit down, and they give you your spiel. And, like, the Cardinals, Danny Green was selling me hard. Like, hey, you want to be a Cardinal? This is going to be a culture. This is our field. He showed me how it rolled out, and it rolled back in that big toaster in Arizona. I'm like, sweet. The Cardinals stink pretty regularly. Like, you're excited, though, and I like your excitement. Marvin Lewis, Tony Dungy. But, like, one room was very different, and that was the Patriots with Belichick. And just he chimed in. He asked questions. He asked about my scar in my head. No one else asked about that. Like, no one else asked about the accident when I fell down the steps on a houseboat. Like, very detailed-oriented. Being around Vrabel and Brewski for all these years and stuff, too. Like, he's just so buttoned up, and he's forgotten more football than most. Like, he's going to stop. If you don't have good quarterback play, he's going to stop you. Like, he is absolutely going to stop you. And if you have good quarterback play, I bet you he can confuse them. So I'm really interested. That'll be a fun storyline. Like, NC State, Argo said it, like, there's a very good chance they fall off a cliff. But I draw the line. You know, Virginia Tech, interesting to watch them to see what they become. Wake Forest. Virginia, here's the one thing I'll say about Virginia and Tony Elliott. They've not been good, but they, for the first time, are spending resources now and bringing guys in and trying to win. Like, for a while, it was like, nah, I'm not going to do that. But they're actually trying to bring people in and trying to make it work. And I think that goes a long way for them to see if they can maybe get past three wins in the conference. But a lot of this is the easiest league to pick when it comes to preseason. And it's also the least amount of depth by far in any league. Least amount of teams that I'm going to put on this thing that I think can win it.
And I think that might actually come to fruition when you look at college football playoff projections, which we'll do at the end. These next two categories, I'm going to kind of blend together because for me, it's the same answer. Who has the toughest schedule in the league? And then who's coming back down to earth? I think those are one and the same. And I think that is Syracuse.
Syracuse.
Because yeah. Schedule-wise, Tennessee in the opener, which granted Tennessee has a new QB, but still Tennessee in the opener. At Clemson, at SMU, at Tech, at Miami, at Notre Dame.
Notre Dame.
Just a lot of ats that are not going to be fun for Fran Brown and potentially, I guess, Angeli at QB and maybe the Collins kid from LSU, but still.
Well, supposedly, Collins is supposed to be the starter. So that's interesting in and of itself. But, and here's why I think we both believe this, too. Pena leaves, goes to Penn State. They lose Gadsden at tight end. Kyle McCord was an animal. Like, Kyle McCord was the definition of lightning in a bottle. The definition of, by the way, I was wrong. Like, I watched that kid at Ohio State, and I'm like, missing something. Something's not there. Like, this dude's – I just don't see it. I don't think Ohio State saw it. This is why it's important to have a transfer portal window to me and having the transfer portal, Brent, because not all coaches are right. Yeah. Don't operate under the assumption that all coaches put players in boxes and are willing to move them from a box, because most players aren't. Like, most coaches aren't. They get their mind around something. It's once you get labeled, it's really hard to get out of it. But he struggled like crazy, and that was on him, and had some decent performances. I remember the Notre Dame game late. Like, he made some plays and found a way to get it done. But last year, they win 10 games. I mean, listen, they had a great schedule too. So they were the opposite end of this. But Syracuse definitely not benefiting from the schedule. Again, if it's a toss-up game or they're more talented and you're at their place, your percentages plummet to win. And Brent gave you away from home for Tennessee, away from home Clemson, SMU, Miami, and Notre Dame. So, like, several of the best teams in the conference. I still believe in Fran Brown, by the way. Like, yes. I still think Fran Brown's honesty, candor, like, kind of moxie and kind of, like, blank you. He's got some of that to him. Like, you know, I'm going to do it my way, which I think is really, really cool. He's a New Yorker that's different. Like, I appreciate that about him. He's a great fit for Syracuse. I just think they have to take a step back from that 10-win campaign a year ago.
When you look at it strategically, too, where is he also winning right now? He's winning in recruiting.
Yeah.
He just recently got a 5-star receiver commit from out of Florida. And it's like, okay, I'm going to show the world that I can, you know, get some guys and coach and be a great coach and be successful, knowing I might take a step back a year from that, but then the recruiting will pick back up, and I want to try to build something that's sustainable over the long haul versus the just portal every year, and it's you're trying every year just to play the portal lottery. So,
well, and until you change my mind and until you prove it to me on the national level, everybody who's won a national championship recruited a high level. Like, there is no one that's turned it completely around and said, and then gone and won a championship. Now, Ole Miss, to me, did about as good a job as anyone last year. Like, they basically went and just – they went grocery shopping, and they got the eggs, and they got the meat, they got the milk, they got all of it. Like, they went all in, spent some cheddar, and changed it. Now, listen, Texas Tech this year is a prime candidate. Like, let's watch them, because they were a good team a year ago. Like, does this take them over the top now with going and getting a couple of dudes, which can – absolutely – I think that's the way to do it, but you still got to have some form of a culture when you look at champions and all the champions in the past. Last year, you know, you got Ohio State, obviously. Everybody knows what they are. They played Texas in the semifinal. Both those teams recruited an elite level. Notre Dame and Penn State recruited an elite level. Like, their ancillary pieces are necessary, but not, yes, to me, not just going and buying all of that and putting it together in 1 year and saying this works and this is what it is.
The other couple other candidates in terms of the down to earth. One is SMU, because they were 8-0 in the league a year ago. Like,
first year in the league. Kind of like Oregon, by the way. Just walked in there like, I thought this was supposed to be difficult. Like, y'all told me, like, going into the Power Five was supposed to be really, really hard. They weren't even in the Power Five, Power Four now. Like, yeah, they weren't invited for all of those years. And they just walked in and said, this wasn't that bad. Like, this ain't that hard. And had a chance to beat Clemson late too. They didn't show up in the first half, and that's their fault. But yeah, obviously going to the college, they have to. I would think more. And me and you've talked about this already. The defensive side of the football, like, right, that regression, I think, happens a little bit, and then maybe a little bit on offense, and then maybe you're not near as good as you were, obviously.
And you could still be a really good team and be 6-2 in the league because your schedule is way different. So
you could still go to the college football playoff, like
potentially. I mean, because they're a non-conference too. With TCU and Baylor wins, if they win those two games,
so it's going to be interesting to watch for sure, that side of the non-Clemson side and who we start picking.
All right, so one of the team before we get into the next category, which is transfer of the year, Miami. Do you think they maybe take a step back because they just lost Cam Ward, who wasn't just a first-round pick; he was the number one pick.
He was good,
Martinez.
He was okay. He was pretty. He was a pretty good player.
Solid, very solid player. No Martinez at running back. No Restrepo. No, by the way, top six targets, 375 of their 456 targets gone. And with their schedule, so much of what they did a year ago was Cam Moore being Superman. So do they take a step back, adding Notre Dame to the non-conference, not, you know, Florida being maybe a little bit more difficult opponent this year versus what they did to them in the opening game? So that's one for me that they might kind of take a step back too, potentially.
I see it, and especially because barely beat Cal. Like, you remember that 39-38 game? Like, Cam Ward went off, you know, for 28 points, I think, in the fourth quarter. By the way, Reese Davis sounded like an absolute humpy in the booth. He's like, ah! Sounded like he smoked a cigar.
Long day for him. It was a long day.
Oh, my gosh. It was, I think it was a four-point win against Virginia Tech. It was a Hail Mary at the end of the game. Syracuse late in the season barely beat them, but every game they played was pretty close, pretty competitive. Georgia Tech barely beat them. But, yeah, I think here's the thing. Miami's talented. They've recruited really, really well. But the same reason I'm never going to pick Miami to win anything of consequence is because I don't think they've done a good job when they need it the most, and their staff needs to go get them a win and be organized. And I just – like, Cam Ward, to me, did it freestyling a lot, yes. But I do think the talent gap between them and at least – there's 17 teams in the league now? Is there 17?
It's something like that.
Right around like that. Of the other 17 teams, they're more talented at least than 14 other teams.
Right.
Like, at least than 14 other teams. So their talent's going to win them a shoot ton of games. But, yeah, opening up with Notre Dame is going to be very interesting to watch because Notre Dame breaking in a quarterback, them breaking in a quarterback. But let's not forget, like, Carson Beck's a good player, man. And I think a lot of people are going to look back and they've hated on Carson Beck and they're like, God dang, this kid's really good. Go look at him 2 years ago. I mean, when everything was good at Georgia, and listen, I've heard so many people say, when you're throwing to Bowers and McConkie, yeah, anybody can look good. No. When you have the – anticipation that he has getting the ball out, the quick trigger, like, he's got some good things to him that I think that with a good OC now in Miami with good weapons in a league that's going to be, they're going to be more talented than people. I still think they're going to score a bunch of points. And I think he's going to be one of the best players in the league, especially at the quarterback spot. So I'm all in. I think Beck, I'm a Beck fan. I think he's a good player.
I would have said prior to last season, especially when you're looking at it in terms of talking about the draft and things of that nature, is he was the best in-structure quarterback in the country. The thing for him was when he got pressured. And last year, when he got pressured, it turned into unplayable almost. In like his passing PFF passing grade under pressure last year was 30.6. And does that maybe get regressed back a little bit more in the positive sense? So, all right, we'll get to him now. So, because I'll give you him as one of the options as transfer.
I think Miami will protect him too, by the way. I think Miami's offensive line is the strength of their team. I think they'll run the football. They'll spread it out. I think he'll be protected. That's why I think he'll be great. But go ahead.
All right, so hit Carson Beck at Miami, coming from UGA. Miller Moss at Louisville, coming from USC. Darian Mensah at Duke. And then a couple others, non-QB. Eric Rivers, the receiver that transferred to Tech from FIU. And then Will Helt, who is transferred to Clemson, no less, from Purdue.
Like, they do that?
That actually happened.
Yes.
So who would you say is the transfer of the year in the conference?
Okay. This is easy to me. I think Beck's going to kill it. But if you're watching college football, and if you've watched Louisville, and if you've watched Jeff Brohm, he's a freaking superstar. The way he coaches the game, the way he does, the way he feels the game, the way he can, you know, use misdirection, the way he can use pro-style concepts with spread concepts and take any quarterback, and I mean any quarterback. I think he could win with any quarterback in this league. And I just think with him, with their running back who's on my fantasy team, I think is going to absolutely destroy it. Like, if you saw him as a freshman a year ago, like, the dude had superstar written all over it. Now come back, get a little bit bigger. The speed's still going to be there in this offense. Miller Moss also showed me some swag last year, man. Like, he showed me, because he got the shiznit kicked out of him. That dude got absolutely destroyed. That offensive line was very ungood for USC. And I think Miller Moss is going to come in and absolutely tear it up at Louisville.
All right. I in terms of impact, the Mensa kid at Duke, I think might have, like, if he can lift them up, like, their schedule is another one for me that potentially, but no, I agree. I think you're right with Brohm and Miller Moss at Louisville.
Dude, he's so good. Jeff Brohm.
The Helt kid at Clemson, like, he's going to make Woods and Parker that much better. Like, another guy there that can take pressure off of two great players, make them even better. Like, you talk about with, you know, Jonathan Sullivan being there 1 year and then not the next. Like,
well, and the importance of, like, Clemson last year, when those guys rotated, they fell off a cliff. Like, when they subbed out, there was a significant drop off, and they've recruited so well, and now they develop. Like, I looked for that to be a little bit more of a strength, and a depth factor won't be as big of a deal, and that will definitely help.
All right. So next up, Coach of the Year, which, by the way, has only been won by Dabo Swinney twice, in 2015 and 2018. Where are you heading? Where are you going?
And by the way, picking an ACC Coach of the Year is another thing that's fun, because if you look at the past winners of
Satterfield,
this,
like, Satterfield won it, and they were 8-5 one year.
I think. Yes, in 19, I think it was. But, like, Lashley won it last year. Rhett Lashley, obviously undefeated, walking in the conference, like, with the championship belt around his waist and not losing a game during the regular season. Before that was Norvell. Then Elko, who obviously goes from Duke to A&M. Hey, Clawson, Coach Clawson in 21. Brian Kelly in 20. Yep, because
Notre Dame was COVID years weird. ACC. Yep,
it's just what happens. It's weird. And like you said, Scott Satterfield. Dabo's only won it, like, in the last, you know, whatever, 7-8 years. Like, he hasn't won it since 18. That's really strange, isn't it? Like, that's – it's crazy that they found ways not to give it to him. Obviously, they gave it to him a bunch, you know, before that. It's Dabo Swinney. Like, it's not – I love to find other names and other guys, and I really want to be like – I want to give everybody love. And now, can you even name, you know, can you even name Stanford's coach? Like, most people in the country
– right?
Frank Wright.
Oh, right now. Remember? That's right. Right. That's right. Because
we talked about that.
That's right.
Yes. Like, it's just issues. Crazy. Like – it's going to be interesting to see, but I don't foresee that. But you might go a different route because of the team you talked about a second ago. Are you going there?
That was the name that I have circled. By the way, it just happens to be a great first name. But Coach Brent Key from Georgia Tech. I think that was going to be my pick, because I'll lead into the next question. Clemson's in the championship game. Who's there with them? I'm going with the Yellow Jackets, and mainly because of their schedule. Because if you look at their schedule, they have Clemson in the third game at home. And then it's at Wake Forest, Virginia Tech home, at Duke, which is their toughest, you know, potentially toughest road game. Syracuse at home, who was already said, think we're taking a step back. At NC State, at Boston College, Pitt at home. I think they go 6-1 in the conference, or 7-1 in the conference.
But, you know, the interesting thing about Georgia Tech, because next we're going to parlay this into, you know, going to the college football playoff. They open with Colorado, which is a tough game. I mean, I think Colorado's rebuilding, but like that, they've got talent. They've got some speed. At Colorado, which will be difficult. And then they end with Georgia, which will be difficult, obviously, even though they've given them some work the last couple of years. They've definitely made it hard on them. So you think about Tech too for bigger picture, playoff picture, you know, kind of will be in the mix. And man, we talked about it earlier with the QB, with the running back, with the receivers. Like, this is a team that, like, Faulkner knows how to dial up plays. He knows that they know how they've taken a step backwards on defense, and I'm interested to watch them on defense and who they can stop, you know. But offensively, I know they'll score, so I have no problem with that being Georgia Tech. I would take Louisville. I just think that, like I just talked about with Louisville and Miller Moss, like, I just think that Louisville is going to be a team that I trust them. I trust who they are always. I trust that they'll score points always, kind of like Faulkner. And you look at their schedule: Eastern Kentucky, JMU, Bowling Green, Pitt, Virginia. They got to go to Miami. Host Boston College, Virginia Tech, Cal. They play Clemson. By the way, they beat Clemson a year ago. Don't forget that.
Ran all over them.
Then they play SMU, and then they play Kentucky. So they've got a tough schedule, but I do think that they're a team that will be super competitive. You saw it a year ago, and I think you'll continue to see it. They'll continue to grow with Coach Brohm, and I think they're going to be right there in the mix. I think they take – listen, they played for it against FSU 2 years ago. So it's not like they haven't been in this situation.
Miami was – I did think about Miami in that realm because – they only play Louisville. They get Louisville at home, and they have to go to SMU. But that feels like a – much like we saw last year at Syracuse late, they go and take that loss. They got to go at Virginia Tech and at Pitt to end the season in at November. Pitt. In, like, late November.
Those are two tough places to play. Like, Miami teams going into severe cold because Pittsburgh's going to be – mother freaking cold. Like, yes. When you go from the South and it's still beautiful down there, way down there in Miami, and you go to Pittsburgh and you go to Blacksburg, like, you're going to be off the bus with so many layers. It's going to be ridiculous. You give me the Ham Warners. Like, they'll be huddled up like a campfire around the burner down there near the sidelines, the heated seats. Like, it will be in full effect. So that's the part of the schedule that I thought would be interesting as well. Having that late in the year, just being from South Florida, obviously.
All right, so college football playoff teams. Obviously, we're putting Clemson in because we pick them to win the championship in the conference. Is there another team? Two questions. One, is there another team?
No.
I didn't put in either. I wrote just Clemson.
I think just Clemson. Last year, we were really close to having just SMU. So, you know, think about that. Like, it was right there a year ago. And so I think
SMU wins. They're the only one.
Correct. They're the only ones. And then, you know, yes.
Miami? Like, was Miami? I can't remember now.
Well, Miami was battling with Ole Miss and Bama. And
yeah.
So they could have snuck in there. But in the final rankings, they were not in the mix because the other two were ahead of them. So it was very close a year ago, the league not being very deep, the league not having – and here's the thing. You know, the Big Ten at the bottom is pretty bad, but the Big Ten towards the middle and the top becomes really, really good, and you got multiple teams that can win it. SEC, same thing. Couple of bad at the bottom, but on the whole, a lot of teams that can be consistent and can beat you. And then the Big 12, you know, I think it's pretty – it's a little bit more top-heavy than it was. I think Arizona State – is up there. Who'd you pick to win the Big 12? You picked
we haven't done that yet. We haven't done a whole Big 12 show yet.
Yeah, but I thought
Arizona State is the team to beat. Yes. I think
you picked some. I don't think you're gonna pick Arizona State. So it'll be interesting to watch. The Big 12, this is why the Big 12 and the ACC are fighting with the Big 10, the SEC about getting more bids, because the automatic bids and what they want, because this is the perceived huge difference in their scheduling versus other. And listen, it's there. Like, it's there. Whether we want to agree with it or not, like, there is a big difference. But one, and they're not going to be happy about it. That's not going to be a fun thing to be discussing late in the season.
All right, so the second question, is there any world where you see Clemson not being the representative from the ACC?
Yeah, Cade Klubnik gets hurt. I mean, I think, you know, something like that. I just – and listen, I That's a better question for you because you know I'm all in. Like I'm full head of steam, and I see all the things that just I've seen in the past that win games with the quarterback and the experience of the wide receiver and the two first round defensive linemen. I mean, I just and corner with Terrell. Like I just and then you got the like their defense, man. They never should have been that bad, but now having Woods and Parker and Sammy Brown in the middle, who's a freak show, Terrell in the back end. Like you've got players at every level that can dominate the game. And so I think they can win, you know, a multitude of ways. So I just don't like, maybe they get there and they trip around, they lose the game, but I think they'll dominate the league outside of injuries. I just can't see anything that would take them out of it.
Yeah. And that's what you, so if you say that, okay, they're going to be in the game potentially and lose that one singular game, it puts all the importance on their opening game as well as their final game with LSU and South Carolina.
Which
they take two L's, they take two L's there. Like they're not getting the benefit of the doubt by being in a championship game of the ACC at that point.
Well, and I think this is what really helps Clemson, or it really helps the ACC too. Like Clemson has a chance to go earn some cred for them right out the gates. You go beat LSU, who's everybody's going to have in the top 10. Like that's a great start to the season. You beat another SEC team to end it with South Carolina. Like they've got a chance with their schedule, with their non-conference schedule to make some hay, like for seeding purposes in the playoff, for bragging rights in the ACC. Then when they go struggle, you know, on the road at Louisville, you know, like, okay, well, Louisville's a good team. It's not just Louisville's terrible, you know, and the whole league's terrible, which a lot of times is kind of what you point to. But their schedule, listen, of the teams that we talked about in the ACC, they play Georgia Tech, they play SMU, they play Louisville. Like those are the better teams that we're talking about in this league. So it's going to be fun to watch them play, and I expect them to be by far the most talented team in every game they play, and that might be the whole season, Brent. Like week one, they're the more talented team to me.
I agree.
That's what's crazy. Like it's not just Clemson riding on coattails past, and because the recent history hasn't been as good. To me, this just feels like the old school history. And I say old school, it's like 8 years ago, 7 years ago, last 5 years, 6 years. Trevor Lawrence was there like 4 years ago, bro. So it's got that feel. With the leadership, add in the transfer portal and the culture still being as good as ever, man, you better watch out because Clemson's here to stay.
Hashtag all in.
All freaking in. All right, so I've already stated I'm all in on the Tigers. We know that. We've hashtagged it, all that good stuff. How about the other Tigers? How about the Auburn Tigers? Wednesday, we're going to talk to Coach Hugh Freeze. And talk about his squad, man. Like they've gotten better at wide receiver. They have gotten better at quarterback. Like I think the wide receiver room has a debate to be the best in the country. Like that's how kind of good it could be. And so what has he seen from his guys, you know, this spring? What is he expecting? He'll join us and we'll cover the SEC. Like we've done the Big Ten. We've done the ACC. Do the SEC next with Media Days around the corner and we'll get you all lined up. You'll already sound so smart for Media Days. You're going to be like, yeah, I already heard that. I already know who schedules his hardest. I already know who's going to be Coach of the Year. I already know who's going to win the conference. So we'll see you dudes Wednesday. Thank you for joining us like always.